that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape, well, you better hit that.
Chimwits, Chimwits.
That's right, man.
Welcome to the Chimwits Podcast. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Chimwits.
So, Ryan, I'm curious, when is the first time that you remember hearing people speak about like the universe and energy and sort of finding your path and going with the universe and using positive energy and all that sort of stuff? When do you, was that high school? Like, when did you start hearing people talk like that? I know we were in New York, so that's, I'm sure it's like when we started hearing things, it was never anything new. Maybe it went back even further. I'm just, when can you remember hearing something like that?
So I guess it comes from, so I don't know when I remember, maybe high school, but I think a lot of it comes from, you know, yoga and spiritualism and meditation and a lot of that stuff, which does kind of, you get a lot of that in New York. I think that the universe sometimes is used as a placeholder for God. Whether you're religious or not, especially here, a lot of people try to be politically correct and they don't want to assume that, and inoffensive, and they don't want to assume that you're religious or not. So instead of saying, you know, God will guide you, they'll say the universe will guide you or guided me. And so I think that maybe in some ways it's that type of language has probably been going on for as long as there's been religion. It's just that instead of using religion, we say, you know, there's something bigger. There is the universe will guide you, as maybe not also only a way to be inoffensive,
well,
but
that just a euphemism for God. But I think a lot of the people that speak this way are saying this is not God. This is me. This is the path. And that, you know, I'm the one in control of my own destiny. While a lot of people would say that, you know, God had a hand in it.
So
you saying that it's the same thing, or that they're just they're related somehow?
I guess they're different types. So you get, I think some people will, again, I know I get this a lot, where there are people who maybe aren't very religious, but they're spiritual, or they're, you know, they don't consider themselves spiritual, but they feel like there's something guiding them or controlling their lives. And so they'll often refer to the universe. And I think in that sense, it's used as a euphemism for God, or just as a placeholder, or just separate. Like, they just feel like there's some direction. Maybe it's just like all the random stuff that's happened in the universe at this point just is leading to whatever direction you're going, in which case, I guess, then we don't have a choice of anything, whatever the case. But then you have other people who, so this is the other aspect of the kind of spiritual thing, is being more, I guess, it's mindset and awareness and being present and being introspective. I think those are qualities that have kind of infused themselves into fitness and into our lives or in everyday life more recently, because there's some validity to it. There's definitely some mumbo jumbo. If you go on some of these kind of self-help sites, you'll hear people talk some weird stuff and use some weird science, or just outright make stuff up. But on the flip side, there is something to be said for, you know, being mindful and being aware of who you are and where you are, and kind of disconnecting your brain from the body, or from your, or yourself from your life, and being able to examine your own life as it relates to everything around you. I think those are really important aspects to life, and no matter whatever context you want to put it, whether you're more scientific about it, or whether you're more spiritual about it, I think those are important qualities that we've seen more and that are important.
Well, and that's interesting that you even correlated it to fitness. That was sort of my next point. Is that we remember fitness in the 90s, especially coming out of the 70s and 80s, which we don't really remember. But if we watch, you know, something like Pumping Iron or the old bodybuilding events, the general consensus back then is that it was, you know, this sort of like meat-headed thing. It was only for a very particular type of person. And even through the 90s, I guess it started making a little bit of a shift. Mm-hmm. Although we, and I know in the 90s, I guess there's always been a lot of self-help, and we saw a lot of it in the 90s, and of course it progressed. At what point do you remember, because you've worked in fitness and I've been on the periphery of fitness, when did you start seeing the sort of self-help thing start to fuse itself into fitness? Now, they're sort of related, because a lot of people that preach self-help or want to teach it oftentimes will say that fitness should be a part of it, which makes perfect sense. You want to be have a better body, you know, a better physical health and better mental health in regards to that as well. When have you started to see the sort of these two worlds merge?
I don't know for sure, but I can tell you when I think.
Okay, good.
All right. I honestly, I don't know. I know that I hear more and more people talk about it in that way, talk about it. I think what it comes from is athletes that were doing hypnotherapy and working with mind coaches or psychologists. I think that when that became popular, I think that, you know, a lot of times,
now you see the
a lot of times, whatever athletes do, that gets filtered down to the general fitness. So if an athlete's doing
it's
it,
cool
we filter
it
down and
it, yeah.
sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So I think that if the athletes, right, the toughest people, the ones that are, if they're able to kind of say, okay, my brain needs exercise in addition to my body, and they go in and they're doing the hypnotherapy and they're seeing mind coaches and they're working on they're doing visualization, they're working on their own kind of mental game, then everyone else is like, oh, well, if it works for Mike Tyson, then it'll work for me. So I don't know
you think
when
Mike Tyson ever did that.
I think he did. Yeah,
he probably did.
Yeah, no,
sure.
He did. I think so. If I'm not
I don't know
mistaken.
If it was early in his career.
No, I think he did early. Really? If I'm not mistaken, I feel like I read a story. If I'm wrong, I will mention it.
And now it seems like every athlete is like they are.
Lots. I mean,
so many
again,
not
mental
every,
training
so
is important.
Many of them are into it. Yeah,
you see a lot that are again into visualization. So I think it's something that's infused itself. I can't tell you when I saw it really start to connect, but because I definitely remember growing up, we saw self-help as one thing, fitness is another. But now we're seeing that it all blend. You know what it is? It's that we've gotten to a point where health and wellness incorporates your mental health, physical health, your fitness, your medical health. You know, there are all these things
all sort of
that really make up who you are. And we're realizing that it's hard to disconnect any one piece. If you're, you can't. It's hard to focus on one without focusing on everything else. And
sure.
And often, if you only focus on one, it is to the detriment of everything else. So I just think that as we're starting to see that even something like fitness, the more you exercise, that helps your cognitive ability.
Sure.
Like things like that where we're seeing like it's all connected. You know, it's our body and everything we do with it, it's all connected. It all works together. I think that, so yeah, I can't tell you when I really saw it happen, but I think over time it's just kind of grown into that and it'll grow further and continue to grow.
And of course, I think it's grown because it's a commodity as well.
What?
Something like that, like self-help, you know, spirituality can actually be sold and people are making a profit off of it, whether they are gurus, coaches, they're selling books, doing podcasts. It's become a commodity. And once anything becomes a commodity, then it really sort of attaches itself.
Yeah, I know. Every 2 weeks, I got to tell you why we can't turn the gym wits into a mind body program.
Sure.
Self-help.
Sure. Well,
well, anyway,
to our upcoming interview, which we haven't had yet, but I'm going to assume that we're going to talk about these exact topics. It's with Jarrett Grossman, and it's interesting because he was a collegiate wrestler, very successful, and yet it sounds like he's a spiritual. Well, I don't know yet, but I would assume that he is a spiritual guy who actually, discusses a lot of what we were just previously mentioning. So without further ado, here is our conversation with Jarrett Grossman. That hasn't happened yet. Hey, everyone. We are here with Jarrett Grossman. Hey, Jarrett, how's it going?
Hey, things are going well. How about yourself?
Very, very well. Jarrett is the co-founder of Muscle Prodigy. And you are, you were a wrestler as well, correct?
Yeah. I wrestled in high school and then eventually in college, became a three-time All-American wrestler, went overseas and wrestled internationally for a little bit.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so.
I was a wrestler too. And like everything else in life, when it comes to fitness, I was really, really mediocre at it.
I started out worse than mediocre, so I'm right there with you, man.
Well, I started a little bit late, and I actually improved quite a bit. It's one of those things. I think if I had done it since I was, 7 years old or five, like a lot of the kids in this country, I think I would have been pretty good at it.
I think I had a natural build for it. Nice. And I understood the sport and I understood the mechanics of it. I'm just not naturally a great athlete. So the wrestlers at a high level are all fantastic athletes. So there was probably a limit to where I could have gone, but I could have certainly been better than I was. So what got you into wrestling initially?
You know what? I just wanted to take up a sport, and a couple of friends just sort of convinced me to join, and I did. And I was going to quit, actually, within the first couple of months. I was not a tough guy at all. And my dad talked me out of it and eventually stuck with it. And then, fortunately, I was lucky enough to have a couple of mentors come into my life, one in particular, Max, who really took a liking to me and took me under his wing and showed me the meaning of hard work and work ethic and really believed in me, instilled a lot of belief in me. And then from there, that transferred over to believing in myself, and I was able to accomplish some extraordinary things there.
So I've seen that you've cited kind of wrestling as being just a valuable tool in life. Can you tell us how wrestling, what skills are transferable from wrestling that you can kind of teach to other people in everyday life?
Yeah, so I think there's no better sport in terms of wrestling, in terms of understanding just life in general, because everything else is really, every other sport, namely, is team-based in a way. And you have, you know, a couple of exceptions in terms of there, but like wrestling, boxing, tennis, golf, for instance, it's very individualistic in the sense that you can't displace blame on anybody else. You are the driver of your ship, and you're the reason for your failures or success or whatnot. So you learn very quickly that you can't really displace the blame. You have to hold yourself 100% accountable. And most importantly, did you put in the work to breed the results that you want? And there's no better sport in terms of understanding work ethic and all the practices that you have to go through. I mean, I've done lots of other organized sports before and so forth. And it's brutal, man, in terms of the training and in terms of the actual competitions and the matches and so forth. You're dealing at a very high level, especially when you get to the collegiate level. So many people are at there's so much parity there that it's just a tiny fraction that separates you from some other people.
So as an athlete, I'm sure your competitive drive didn't end when you did hang up your singlet. So what do you do to keep that competitive drive? Like, what do you do now to keep that going?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I think that is a very difficult transition, especially in the beginning. When you have something to work for instance, like a national championship, it's very concrete. It's very tangible and finite in terms of the goal that you're striving for. And in business, it's totally different. Things that you implement today sometimes don't take effect for 6 months. And there are a lot of moving parts. For instance, you do have the element of teamwork. You do have the element of hiring and firing and all that kind of stuff. So it takes a lot of adjusting to get used to, but, in terms of keeping the competitive spirit alive, I think it's really a competition within yourself mainly that drives it. And it's really a battle between you and a future version of yourself that you're chasing. And those two are in conflict with one another, because there's something inside of us that basically is saying, well, you know, I should be able to do this, or my life should look like this at this point, but it's not. And then that develops a little bit of frustration, or a lot of frustration rather. And it's reconciling those two differences by actually having a great roadmap and strategy to be able to close the gap. And sometimes you do have to change your expectations because they are warped. They're flawed in terms of these lofty goals that we do have. And then we have to realize that, you know, there is a reality that not necessarily going to be able to do in the time frame that you think you'll be able to do them in, or the technology just doesn't exist yet, or whatever it is, you know. So it does get a lot of adjusting.
So you are the co-founder of Muscle Prodigy, and of course the website is muscleprodigy.com. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so my childhood friend Richie Allen and I, we started up a blog. I was in law school. I went actually into investment banking. Didn't really love the whole corporate structure. I was in law school and didn't really feel like it was going to be a lifelong career that I was going to be passionate in. I saw the value in law school. I analogize it to something called eustress, which is like lifting weights. You tear down the muscle fibers to grow stronger. But disease, on the other hand, is something called distress. You could just recover back to where you were, essentially. And I thought that a career path in something that I really wasn't passionate about was going to be a form of distress in a way. So with that being said, started up a blog with my childhood friend. We wrote hundreds of articles. I actually created this website in Microsoft Front Page, if you know what that is, way before the days of WordPress. So you had to code every page manually. It was a nightmare and took a long, long time. But anyway, we developed a little bit of a following and just had a dream. You know, we didn't even have products at that point, but I basically sold a couple of supplement companies on some advertising, for instance. And Richie is a tremendous, tremendous marketer who is able to build up our social media presence and so forth. And then we hit sort of a mainstream audience with our MP45 program. This is a 45-day workout program and meal plan guide that we created. And it basically just teaches you the basics of fitness in terms of how you could get started, but also advanced lifters. Most of them have muscular imbalances, like myself. When I was, throughout my college wrestling career and so forth, I got injuries. And those, I believe, could have been prevented had I known about being able to correct some muscular imbalances rather quickly. And so that's what it sort of walks you through, and it gradually progresses you up through a 6-week approach to then be able to do many of the workouts that I did throughout my college wrestling career. So it very much is keeping in mind to turn you sort of into an elite athlete at the end of the tunnel. We've had some tremendous success with it, thousands of transformations there. And our presence is pretty big on Facebook, for instance. And we just saw a lot of inconsistencies in the fitness space in terms of conflicting information that was dedicated to hardcore lifters or people who are enhancing on drugs. And there wasn't that much, you know, real good information for the average person, taking two things into account. Number one, a strategy that actually worked. But number two, something that somebody's actually going to do, which requires a lot of understanding about the mind and psychology and why people start something, why people stay committed to it. Because you could have the best roadmap in the world, but if you're eating at the idea of what's pleasurable for them, for instance, you're making them go on to something that has total deprivation in terms of their diet, where they have to give up practically every food, there's no way that the average person is going to stick to that. So we just really had a vision that understood all those concepts, and we wanted to just put it into practice.
Well, a lot of interesting stuff there, and I'd like to revisit some of that. But first, so you mentioned that the program was almost in a way geared towards turning people into elite athletes. Is this program more for younger people or athletic people, or can it really be used for anyone, or was there a certain demographic you were marketing towards?
Yeah, you know what? It can be used by anyone. And when I've worked with hundreds, thousands of people, been able to transform them, fortunately. And through that, I gained a tremendous amount of insight that it goes back to the 80-20 rule, essentially, that 80% of everybody's problems or whatever it is, generally the same, at least the roots are. And 80% of the advice administered is pretty much the same. Now, the customization is usually in that 20%. So it was about creating a program that really tapped into that 80% of how everybody can sort of implement this right away with some customizational features in there, at least the majority of what the problems or issues that most people face on a daily basis, how to account for those. So that's all in the program in terms of how to alter it based on your body weight, for instance, if you're a male or a female, your gender and so forth. If you do have injuries, a knee injury, and you can't run, what are the alternatives for that? So we've accounted for pretty much everything that you could even think of. So it is for everyone, and it is a 6-week, 6.5-week program. And beginners, we definitely made this crystal clear for a beginner to be able to start, keeping in mind that idea of motivation and mindset that we want them to be able to start. And that means starting out very light and something that anybody can handle. But at the same time, the advanced people who say, well, I'm too good for that or whatnot, I speak from personal experience from many injuries that I've suffered, for instance, that a lot of that can be corrected based on fixing your muscular imbalances. For instance, your front delts are probably stronger than your rear delts. The right side of your body, if you're a righty, is stronger than the left side of your body. And all those things add up over time to increase the likelihood of injury. But also, your body will actually prevent muscular growth out of a survival mechanism. It releases something called myostatin, which actually inhibits muscular growth. So you, if you're wondering why you're stuck in plateaus, for instance, you haven't been able to bust out, you do have to go back to the basics. You have to correct certain things that are going on in your body. And at that point, now you can progress upward.
So something like a muscle imbalance might be difficult for the average person to identify. How do you kind of account for that with your program? Are there ways for people to contact you and show you their form or how they do things or their posture or movement? Like, yeah, how do you account for specific things like that where there might be an imbalance or some kind of a compensation pattern that may need to be addressed?
Absolutely. So most people do the wrong technique with many movements. So many of those are addressed. But also it's just a matter of what type of exercises are they doing. When they go do shoulders, for instance, it's mainly focused on shoulder presses, many people, right? Yeah. But they neglect the rear delt movements, for instance, that are going to help balance out the shoulder, the side lateral movements, all that kind of stuff. So it's a matter of just incorporating the right exercises for each body part, and many of that stuff will work out on its own. And of course, form technique is very important, and that's what we stress highly, that it's not about the weight. And to the contrary, in terms of if you're really looking to enhance your physique, Kai Greene talks about this until he's blue in the face, kind of, that he's not a weightlifter, he's a bodybuilder, and there's a distinct difference. A weightlifter looks for a mechanical advantage, meaning they will deliberately try to use momentum in order to make the exercise easier. This is a powerlifter does this deliberately, in a sense, because they want to create leverage in order to create the movement going from point A to point B in the most efficient manner possible. That's almost the exact opposite. It's the antithesis of what you want to do if you're a bodybuilder, which is you want to actually focus on one muscle group that you're trying to enhance, and you want to make the exercise harder for that muscle. So it's actually removing mechanical advantage, removing momentum, and focusing totally on that isolated muscle group, or if it's a compound movement, several of them, and that's where you're going to get the best results.
So now you say the best results as far as a bodybuilding is concerned. So mm-hmm. Is this now in reference to more like a cosmetic look or a fitness? Because for athletic results, that's sort of a different vibe in and of itself.
Great
when you say
question.
The best results, what do you mean in terms of best results?
Absolutely. So me personally, I always thought that there was an idea of the best of both worlds, meaning if you could function like an elite athlete, but you could look like a fitness model, right? That's the ultimate, right? So that's what
Absolutely.
This program is completely dedicated towards, which is we're going to nail the aesthetics with that everybody sort of wants in a way, but also the functional movements that are going to make you elite. And there's lots of the cardio starts out light, but then it gets very intense. And it focuses mainly on, towards the end of the program, anaerobic work, which is lots of sprints, dynamic movements, explosive movements, because the fast twitch muscle fibers is really what's activated when you're talking about elite athletes. They've got a much higher percentage of fast twitch muscle fibers in their body. And that's what we really want to hone in on.
So you mentioned so your blog. Do you still update it regularly, or have you stayed away from that as much now?
Yes. So we update muscleprodigy.com on a regular basis, obviously. And you could go to mp45.com if you're interested in the program. Yeah. But I also have a personal content that I put out in terms of personal development, mindset, success, leadership, all kinds of stuff to help people leave a legacy. And that I update regularly on my personal YouTube channel, Jarek Grossman, and also jarekgrossman.com. There is a blog with lots of content. And you can download the app as well, where content gets pushed out.
Awesome. So I'd like to revisit something that you had mentioned, which I think is an important concept for everybody, you know, into fitness, not into fitness, whatever. It's the idea of what you mentioned, distress. And what was the other one?
Eustress, which is basically, yeah, putting yourself through a stressful situation, knowing that there's growth on the other side.
Yeah, could you just talk a little bit about that? I've never heard it put in those terms. I think it's a wonderful concept, and I think it could really apply to everyone in so many different facets of life.
Absolutely. So we can put ourselves through pain, but push motivation never lasts, not long term, at least. I can't sprint on a track for more than, you know, a few hundred yards kind of thing at a full speed. Eventually, you're going to get burnt out. You're going to slow down. You're going to need to recatch your breath and so forth. But you could go at a steady state for a much longer period of time. So when you get pulled by something, it's almost effortless. Arnold Schwarzenegger said the greatest gift that he had was the art of visualization in a way. And he would actually visually see himself in the movies and in politics way before it actually happened. So we tapped into this, and many people,
a lot of people report that sort of, you know, those sort of tactics, like seeing themselves visualizing something happening before it happens.
Absolutely. And that's going to help tap into something that you feel is part of your destiny. And we can put ourselves through pain as long as we feel like there's growth on the other end of it. And it feels like it's part of our destiny. There has to be that destiny spark in there, though. Otherwise, if we're forcing ourselves to do something at a mere principle because we're trying to prove a point or at a right, it's only going to last for so long. You got to tap into something that's a much higher purpose, and that usually only comes when you're doing something bigger than yourself. So it could be a family member. It could be society at large. It could be feel like you have been called to do something from God, for instance, or whatever it is, right? Whatever is moving through you at a very deep level is going to give you energy. So my methodology for life is very much to understand that the universe gives you clues if you really look for it and you keep your eyes open for it. And when you get energy in a particular activity, it's a very good indicator that you're supposed to go there more often. And if you're really feeling a lot of resistance, let's say that you're in a sales job, and you're feeling a lot of resistance, you know, to pick up the phone and call, you got to dig deep in terms of the, and I always find that the best way to break through with something like that is to find the why behind what's going on, why you do it, but why do you hate it also? And just really explore that, peel the layer, the onion layer by layer to get to the root of why it is. Maybe it's because it is an inefficient process, what you have going on, and you have to tighten up that ship or whatever it is. It could be because there's certain fears in terms of how you feel perceived by the public. It could be that you're afraid of judgment. It could be that you particularly don't respect other people who try to sell you. You got to really find out what that is. And then once you're able to identify it, now you have the power to be able to shift it. And so I'm very much in following that principle that the universe wants good for you and wants to do good for you in a way. And it'll lead you in the right direction where you're supposed to go. But listen to your intuition and instinct.
So kind of makes me think about this a few you know, idioms. One is sort of like a wrestler's credo that we heard from the beginning, which is pain is just weakness leaving the body. And then, of course, the classic weightlifter slogan, no pain, no gain. And we've sort of looked at those and said, well, there's some truth in it, but there's also some fallacy in there, and there's risk in there as well. Do you believe in those statements? Or do you think there's some validity, or do you think sort of maybe – would you agree kind of like with where we stand, where there's some validity, but you have to really take it and really look at it from both angles?
Absolutely. I think you guys are spot on. There's a happy medium in essence of those idioms and so forth. And again, we could put ourselves through pain, but definitely not long term, and definitely not where you want to actually – put yourself in a compromising position where you're going to be detrimentally hurt by it for the long term. I'm all about calculated risks, you know, just really analyze. That's what your brain's for, to analyze and assess the risk. And some fear is very good for you in terms of it is a warning light that's telling you don't proceed. And a lot of times we just shy it off. That says, you know, blast through your fear, you know, act in spite of your fear. But it's always it's a process that's very painful in a way. You don't want to live there forever. You want to find deeper reasons of why the fear is going on. Why is this pain, again, going towards eustress, where I'm putting myself under a little bit of stress, but this is calculated and I know the end result? Or is this distress where I'm really going to damage myself, essentially?
So earlier, also another thing you mentioned that's really important in the fitness industry is just the amount of misinformation that's out there. So can you give us what would you say is your top three kind of myths or misinformation that's out there in the industry?
Top three, sure. I would say number one is calories in versus calories out. The biggest hidden picture is the anabolic hormonal environment that you're trying to tap into. If I were to tell you to eat 3,000 calories of chips and all kinds of candy and cookies, I don't think our bodies are going to react the exact same way.
I don't know about you, but my body would, you know, that's exactly what it's asking me for.
Yeah. So if we feed a grilled chicken and sweet potatoes and oatmeal, same amount of calories, our body's going to have a different response. There's muscle mass at play. The more muscle you have, the more fat you're going to burn just to sustain it, the more energy required and so forth. So protein, macronutrients is very important. And also hormones are at play and are very sensitive. Our body is built for survival. It doesn't care how much, you know, how good you want to look. In essence, it cares about functionality and so forth. So you have to actually, trick your body when you're going on diets to feel like it's coming out of the diet. There's thyroid hormones that are at play, for instance, that you really need to account for. And so the calories in, calories out is not telling the whole picture. Another concept is the idea of a toned muscle. There's no such thing as a toned muscle. You either build muscle or you don't, and you burn fat or you don't, kind of thing. So the muscle reveals itself once you get to a low body fat percentage, and that's the tone look that you're after. And the third maybe is probably the type of cardio to do, or is working out about burning calories. What is it about? And I would say it's not so much about burning calories and so forth. Great workouts can be done in a very short period of time, but as long as they're intense. So Mike Mentzer, for instance, who scored, I think, the only bodybuilder to score a perfect 300, believed in 30-minute workouts, but they were intense. They were brutal. The average person can't really go through that type of intensity. Dorian Yates, same kind of thing. And that's sort of the methodology that I prescribe by.
Dorian also prescribed to the theory of drugs that weren't prescribed. But they were amazing, right? Anyway, I know. But like, they were all doing it back then. But so.
Absolutely, and yes, and I don't believe in enhancing with drugs or natural drugs or anything like that. Obviously, but there are certain, extract the useful, discard the useless, as I always say, which is there's good qualities or good characteristics from everybody in a way, and you guys got to extract them. And same goes with the tools and principles that people teach and so forth. So it's about intense workouts, in my opinion. The classic analogy is a dynamite stick, and you could tap it with a pencil all day long, but the muscle is basically going to like that dynamite stick, and that if you take a hammer and you hit it once, boom, it's going to explode. And that's how the muscle responds in a way. You got to give it a stimulus, but you don't want to annihilate it. So a lot of gym goers go into the volume training and they wonder why they're lifting the same weight year after year. And they're in this plateau and they're stuck. And I've been there. And the way to bust through a plateau is you've got to ramp up the intensity in terms of not the duration. And not the frequency of your workouts, not going in there three times a day or six, 7 days a week and so forth. But what are you doing to maximize those 20, 40 minutes or so forth?
So actually something you mentioned earlier that was very interesting, which is about the whole 80-20, about the information that's out there, that we kind of all have the same information. We're all given the same information, and sort of the last 20% is customizable. Now, I work professionally in an industry that, similar to the fitness industry, just has so much information. I'm a professional musician, so you can go on YouTube, or you could go blogs, whatever it is, and there's so much information out there telling you how to do this, how to, you know, record, or how to promote your band, or whatever it is. And a lot of that information is not always applicable to everyone. So it's taken out of context, and there's so much out of context information. And I'm sure it's very similar to the fitness industry. Well, I know it is, because now I'm sort of working in the fitness industry as well. How do you take all that information out there, if you are sort of just a layman or looking to be healthy, you're not looking to be a fitness model or a professional bodybuilder or even a professional athlete, you just want to be healthy and want to live life and, you know, just enjoy being alive. How do you take all that information out there, not get overwhelmed by it, and use what's applicable to you and sort of discard the rest and say, this is what I need to take from it and, you know, apply it in a healthy manner?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a conundrum that we all face. I think in the beginning, you do have to flood yourself with lots of information from lots of different people, mentors, for instance, people who have already carved out the path that you want in a way. And success is going to leave clues, and there's no sense to rebuild the wheel, essentially. The wheel is out there, and you want to make modifications to it. So take the design, essentially, and see what's worked, and then add and take a little – add your own custom flair. Life is a remix, essentially. The people I look up to, for instance, are going to be very different from the people you look up to, for instance, or the next person. Right. So it's really in crafting out, well, who is that person that you ultimately want to be? But here's where the conundrum lies, is that if I was destined to be an oak tree and I'm listening to somebody else whose their destiny is being a pine tree, it's not really going to apply. Like you're saying, there's some things that you can take, again, extract the useful, discard the useless. There's many things that are not going to apply to you. And I think that's where we get caught up, that one person says this is how they did it. It worked for them in essence, but that was they had a different calling in life. They had a different destiny or a different purpose or whatnot. So you want to find out certain things that they did to if you really compartmentalize it into categories, you're going to be a lot better off. Like, what did this person do to achieve this type of thing? Now you can extract that in a way to apply it immediately, as opposed to just trying to be a duplicate of that person entirely, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. So I want to pivot for a second. So you mentioned that, and I saw when looking through your social media that you've been able to build a nice social media following through your work. So this is something that really applies to almost anyone in any industry, especially in this day and age where social media is such a huge thing. Like, what were you able to do? What steps did you take to really build that following and build like a loyal following?
Yeah, so my business partner, Richie Allen, he is a genius marketer, I call him. He's really, really crafty. He's got all these ninja techniques to be able to build a following really fast and so forth. So it's a combination of providing a tremendous amount of value that's different from what anybody else is doing in a way. You got to be creative. And all you're looking to do, essentially, on social media, for instance, is – if you could get somebody to change their emotional state instantly, now you've got their attention, and attention is huge. And that's when you really captivate them. And then it's another combination of it is just finding the right people in terms of influencers. And you got to come from the angle of providing them value and their fans value. So what is in it for them, essentially? How is your content alone going to provide value to their fans? Or it could be an idea of compensation, or it could be a combination of both. So you got to make it a win-win for everybody in a way. But if you can reach out to influencers who are in your similar industry in a way, you're going to have a leg up. And yes, it might cost some dollars for you to throw at them, but you could be creative as well. You could barter. You could figure out ways that they're going to want to use your content if it's interesting and it's creative and it applies to their fan base, and so forth, and network and make friends and so forth, and you'll be on your way.
Excellent. So, Jared, one more time, your site is muscleprodigy.com.
Yep, muscleprodigy.com, and you can get the workout program at mp45.com. M as in Mary, P as in Paul.
Excellent. Jared, thank you so much. I think you have a tremendous amount of knowledge, and I really like your approach, the way that you put it out there. And just I think you have an excellent sort of balance in life, right? You sort of get it. You know how to sort of reach for what you want, and you know the right way to go about it. It seems like you figured that out over time. I'm sure you're still learning, but it seems like you're in a good place and that you've figured that out. So is there any more knowledge you'd like to impart on us?
No, thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it. And life is a learning lesson every single day. You know, even when you think you have it figured out, life will throw another curveball at you the very next day, you know, to teach you a lesson, keep your ego in check,
sure
all
does.
That stuff,
always
you know,
does.
So it's, you got to just remain humble. Just know there's something bigger out there than you in a way. And, just keep striving to the highest form of yourself. There's a highest form of yourself. And just like in fitness, You may not look like Greg Plitt ever did or any of these fitness models, for instance, but there is a best version of yourself. And if your gut doesn't sense like you're there yet, you'll always be at conflict. So you've got to really just analyze what exactly is it that would make you feel fulfilled. And it's two things. It's number one is that you've got an internal blueprint inside of you of who you're destined to be. And it's almost like the seed is there. And the universe is going to guide you throughout that entire process, and it's going to work for you, not against you, because it wants you to be that best version of yourself, essentially. And the seed is there, and it knows whether you're going to be an oak tree or not, what leaves you're going to have, what color you're going to be growing up. But you have to do your part in the essence of it. It's a 50-50 world of you got to give it water, you got to give it sunlight, you got to take care of it every day. And that's your half of the bargain to be able to control. And I think that's a very internal game, not so much external. I think that's going to be, where is your heart? Are you seeing the good in people? Are you really seeing the good in the universe and so forth? Like Einstein said, you either can see everything as a miracle or not. And if you connect with that idea more and more, the more you'll see it, and the more you'll connect to it, and the more you'll see how intricately everything works.
Awesome. Well, once again, Jared, thank you very much for being on the Gymwits.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Awesome stuff.
All right, so you asked a great question that deserved a great answer. Not that Jared didn't give a great answer,
yeah, yeah.
But I just feel like I think I have a better answer, right? So
okay,
you had a
okay,
really
okay.
Pretty long question, but it essentially was, how do we deal with all the misinformation?
Yeah.
There's a really simple way to deal with it. Ask the trainer. Send
yes.
us an email. If you got a question, then ask us. If you see two things that you don't get, things conflict, don't make sense, then send us an email and we will do our best to sort it out for you.
So how do you deal with having all this extra money lying around? What should you do with that?
Well, of course, send it to
the Gymwits. There you go. That's
yeah. You know, for a certain amount, you can even be on our logo.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Right. For a certain amount, we'll make you your own logo.
That's not much.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan will do the work, and I'll take the money. It's just, I think that's a good steady plan.
I guess so. I don't think they'd be happy with whatever work I do. I'm not a good artist.
Well, you're not selling yourself very well.
No.
I think you need someone to help market your ideas.
Yeah. Okay. You want to do that?
No.
Okay. Sorry. All right. Well, anyway, as I said, if you have questions, ask the trainer. All of our other stuff is at thegymwits.com. So that we can find our social media and all that good stuff. Shoot us emails, rate us, review us, please.
We love to hear the feedback. You guys are giving us such great stuff. We love to hear that you've been listening and that we've been helpful. And we love the questions. We love the comments. So, yeah, keep it up.
Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's it. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Gymwits.